Angelo lay with his face pressed into sandy soil in total darkness. To his amazement, he was still alive. Or at least if he was dead, then he was still able to think. Let's see now. He'd looked up at the great thing dropping out of the sky right towards his head and had flung himself down, expecting at any second to become just a little greasy mark in a great big hole. No. He probably hadn't died. He'd have remembered something important like that.
Gerda? Is that you?
Said Gerda's voice. I hope so.
Peon.
Peon, said Peon.
Angelo pushed himself up onto his hands and knees. Any idea where we are? He said.
In the ship, suggested Gerda.
Don't think so, said Angelo.
There's soil here and grass and stuff.
Then where did the ship go? Why is it all dark?
Angelo brushed the dirt off his coat.
Dunno. Maybe it missed us. Maybe we were knocked out and now it's night time.
I can see a bit of light around the horizon, said Gerda. That's not right, is it? That's not how nights are supposed to be.
Angelo looked around. There was a line of light in the distance. And there was also a strange sound. So quiet that you could miss it, but which, once you'd noticed it, also seemed to fill up the world. He stood up to get a better view. There was a faint thump.
Ow!
Angelo reached up to rub his head. His hand touched metal. Crouching a little, he risked turning his head to see what it was he'd hit. He went very thoughtful for a while. Then he said,
Gerda, you're going to find this amazingly hard to believe.
This time, said Masklin to the thing, I want you to translate exactly. Do you understand? Don't try to frighten him. Humans had surrounded the ship. At least they were trying to surround it, but you'd need an awful lot of humans to surround something the size of the ship, so they were just surrounding it in places.
More trucks were arriving, many of them with sirens blaring. Grandson Richard had been left standing by himself, watching his own shoulder nervously.
Besides, we owe him something, said Masklin. We used his satellites and we stole things.
You said you wanted to do it your way, no help from humans, you said
the thing.
It's different now. There's the ship. We've made it. We're not begging any more.
May I point out that you're sitting on his shoulder, not him on yours?
Never mind that, said Masklin. Ask him to walk towards the ship and say please. Grandson Richard's reply seemed to take a long time, but he did start to walk towards the crowds around the ship.
What did he say? Said Masklin, hanging on tightly to the sweater.
He said, his grandfather always talked about the little people, but he never believed it until now. He said, are you like the ones in the old store?
Masklin's mouth dropped open. Grandson Richard was watching him intently.
Tell him yes.
The thing boomed. Grandson Richard rumbled.
He says his grandfather made jokes about little people in the store. He used to say they brought him luck.
Did his grandfather ever see a gnome?
He says no, but he says that when his grandfather and his grandfather's brother were starting the store and stayed late every night to do the office work, they used to hear sounds in the walls, and they used to tell each other there were little store people. It was a sort of joke. He says that when he was small, his grandfather used to tell him about little people who came out at night to play with the toys.
But the store gnomes never did things like that, said Masklin.
I didn't say the stories were true.
Masklin's mind was in turmoil. He'd always believed that humans were quite intelligent, but this was something more than intelligence. He remembered the book called Gulliver's Travels. It had been a big surprise to the gnomes. There'd never been an island of small people. He was certain of that. It was a made-up thing. There had been lots of books in the store that were like that. For some reason, humans needed things that weren't true. They never really thought gnomes existed, he thought, but they wanted to believe that we did. The ship was a lot closer now. There didn't seem to be any doors or windows anywhere. It was as featureless as an egg. Why are all the humans around the ship? He said. Grandson Richard's reply was another gale.
He says they think creatures from another world will come out and talk to them.
Why?
I don't know, said the thing. Perhaps they don't want to be alone.
But there's no one in it. It's our ship, Masklin began.
There was a wail. The crowd put their hands over their ears. Lights appeared on the darkness of the ship. They twinkled all over the hull in patterns which raced backwards and forwards and disappeared. There was another wail.
There isn't anyone in it, is there? Said Masklin.
No gnomes were left on it in hibernation or anything.
High up on the ship, a square hole opened. There was a whiffling noise, and a beam of red light shot out and set fire to a patch of scrub several hundred yards away. People started to run. The ship rose a few feet, wobbling alarmingly. It drifted sideways a little, then it went straight up so fast that it was just a blur and jerked to a halt high over the crowd. And then it turned over. And then it went on its edge for a while. It floated back down again and landed, more or less. That is, one side touched the ground and the other rested on the air, on nothing. The ship spoke loudly.
To the humans, it must have sounded like a high-pitched chattering. What it actually said was,
Is this a microphone? Can't find the button that opens the door. Let's try this one.
Another square hole opened. Brilliant blue light flooded out.
Got it!
There was the distorted of someone who isn't certain if their microphone is working and who is tapping it experimentally.
Masklin? Are you out there?
That's Angelo, said Masklin. No one else drives like that. Thing, tell grandson Richard I must get on the ship, please.
The human nodded. Humans were milling around the base of the ship. The doorway was too high up for them to reach. With Masklin hanging on grimly, grandson Richard pushed his way through the throng. The ship wailed again. Came Angelo's hugely amplified voice, apparently talking to someone else.
I'm not sure about this switch, but maybe it's... Certainly I'm going to press it. Why shouldn't I press it? It's next to the door one. It must be safe. Look, shut up!
A silver ramp wound out of the doorway. It looked big enough for humans.
See? See?
Said Angelo's voice. Thing, can you speak to Angelo? Said Masklin. Tell him I'm out here trying to get to the ship.
No, he appears to be randomly pressing buttons. It is to be hoped that he does not press the wrong ones.
I thought you could tell the ship what to do, said Masklin.
The thing managed to sound shocked.
Not when a gnome is in it, it said. I can't tell it not to do what a gnome tells it to do. That's what being a machine is all about.
Grandson Richard was shoving his way through the pushing, shouting mass of humans, but it was hard going. Masklin sighed. Ask grandson Richard to put me down, he said. Then he added, and say thank you. Say it. It would have been nice to talk more. The thing did the translation. Grandson Richard looked surprised. The thing spoke again. Then a hand reached up towards Masklin. Grandson Richard's fingers gripped Masklin lightly, as though the human was holding something very fragile. Masklin felt himself being slowly lowered towards the ground. There was a forest of human legs around him. He looked up into Grandson Richard's huge face, and trying to make his voice as deep and slow as possible, said the only word any gnome had said directly to a human in 5,000 years.
Good bye.
Then he ran through the maze of feet.
Several humans with official-looking trousers and big boots were standing at the bottom of the ramp. Masklin scurried between them and ran on upwards. Ahead of him, blue light shone out of the open hatchway. As he ran, he saw two dots appear on the lip of the entrance. The ramp was long. Masklin hadn't slept for hours. Suddenly, all his legs wanted to do was to go somewhere close and lie down. He staggered to the top of the ramp, and the dots became the heads of Gerda and Peon. They reached out and pulled him into the ship. He turned around and looked down into a sea of human faces below him. He'd never looked down on a human before.
Are you all right? Said Gerda. Did they
do anything to you?
I'm fine, murmured Masklin.
You look dreadful.
We should have talked to them, Gerda, said Masklin. They need us.
Are you sure you're all right? Said Gerda.
Masklin's head felt full of cotton wool. You know you believed in Arnold Brothers S-1905, he managed to say.
Yes, said Gerda.
Masklin gave him a mad, triumphant grin.
Well, he believed in you too. How about that?
The ramp wound in, the doorway shut. The ship rose in the air until it was high above the buildings, and it stayed there while the sun set. The humans below tried shining coloured lights at it and playing tunes at it, and eventually just speaking to it in every language known to humans. It didn't seem to take any notice. Masklin woke up. He was on a bed. He sat up and looked around the room. There was just the bed, a table, and a chair. A table and a chair. Like human furniture. But it was gnome-sized. Masklin got up and padded across the metal floor to the door. Gnome-sized again. A doorway made by gnomes for gnomes to walk through. It led into a corridor lined with doors. Something purred towards him. It was a small black box, rather like the thing, mounted on little treads. A small revolving brush on the front was sweeping dust into a slot. At least, if there had been any dust, it would have been sweeping it. Masklin wondered how many times it had industriously cleaned this corridor while it waited for gnomes to come back. It bumped into his foot, beeped at him, and then bustled off in the opposite direction. Masklin followed it. After a while, he passed another one. It was moving along the ceiling. He turned the corner and almost walked into Gerda.
You're up!
Yes, said Masklin. We're on the ship, right?
It's amazing,
Gerda began. He looked wild-eyed, and his hair was sticking up at all angles. I'm sure it is, said Masklin reassuringly.
But there's all these... And there's this great big... And there's these huge... And you'd never believe how wide... And there's so much...
Gerda's voice trailed off. He grabbed Masklin's arm. Come on, he said, and half ran along the corridor.
How did you get on? Said Masklin, trying to keep up. It was amazing. Angelo touched this panel thing, and it just moved aside. And then we were inside, and there was a big elevator thing. And then we were in this great big room with a seat, and Angelo sat down, and all these lights came on, and he started pressing buttons and moving things.
Didn't you try to stop him?
Gerda rolled his eyes. You know Angelo and machines, he said. But the thing is trying to get him to be sensible.
He led the way through another arch into... Well, it had to be a room. It was inside the ship. It was just as well he knew that, Masklin thought, because otherwise he'd think it was outside. It stretched away as big as one of the departments in the store. Vast screens and complicated-looking panels covered the walls. Most of them were dark. Shadowy gloom stretched away in every direction, except for a little puddle of light in the very centre of the room. It illuminated Angelo, almost lost in a padded chair. He had the thing in front of him, on a sloping metal board studded with switches. He'd obviously been arguing with it. The thing looked as small and black and square as it could.
He wants to drive the ship, it said. You're a machine. You have to do what you're told, snapped Angelo. I am an intelligent machine, and I don't want to end up very flat at the bottom of a deep hole, said the thing. You can't pilot the ship yet. How do you know? You won't let me try. I drove the truck, didn't I?
It wasn't my fault. All those trees and streetlights and things got in the way, he added, after catching Masklin's eye. I expect the ship is more difficult, said Masklin.
But I'm learning about it all the time, said Angelo. It's easy. All the buttons have got little pictures on them. Look.
He pressed a button. One of the big screens lit up, showing the crowds outside the ship.
They've been waiting there for ages, said Gerda. What do they want? Said Angelo. Search me, said Gerda. Who knows what humans want?
Angelo rapped on the thing with his knuckles.
Right, Mr. Clever. If I'm not going to do the driving, who is? Me? How? There is a slot by the seat.
I see it.
Put me in it.
Angelo shrugged and picked up the thing. It slid smoothly into the floor until only the top of it was showing.
Look, said Angelo, can't I do something? Operate the windscreen wipers or something? I'd feel a twerp sitting here doing nothing.
The thing didn't seem to hear him. Its lights flickered on and off for a moment, as if it was making itself comfortable in a mechanical kind of way. Then it said, in a much deeper voice than it had ever used before,
"Right!"
Lights came on all over the ship. They spread out from the thing like a tide. Panels lit up like little skies full of stars. Big lights in the ceiling flickered on. There was a distant banging and fizzing as electricity was woken up and the air began to smell of thunderstorms.
"All systems in working order," boomed the thing. "Name our destination."
"What?" said Masklin. "And don't shout."
"Where are we going?" said the thing. "You have to name our destination."
"It's got a name already. It's called the Quarry, isn't it?" said Masklin.
"Where is it?"
"It's..." Masklin waved an arm vaguely. "Well, it's, over that way somewhere."
"Which way?"
"How should I know? How many ways are there?"
"Thing, are you telling us you don't know the way back to the Quarry?" said Gerda. "That is correct."
"Can't you find the quarry if you go up high enough?" said Angelo. "You ought to be able to see it if you go up high enough."
"Very well."
"Can I do it?" said Angelo. "Please."
"Press down with your left foot and pull back on the green lever, then," said the thing.
There wasn't so much a noise as a change in the type of silence. Masklin thought he felt heavy for a moment, but then the sensation passed. The picture in the screen got smaller.
"Now, this is what I call proper flying," said Angelo happily. "No noise, none of that stupid flapping."
"Yes. Where's Peon?" said Masklin.
"He wandered off," said Gerda. "I think he was going to get something to eat."
"On a machine that no gnome has been on for 15,000 years," said Masklin. Gerda shrugged.
"Well, maybe there's something at the back of a cupboard somewhere," he said.
"I want a word with you, Masklin," he added.
"Yes?"
Gerda moved closer and glanced over his shoulder at Angelo, who was lying back in the control seat with a look of dreamy contentment on his face. He lowered his voice.
"We shouldn't be doing this," he said. "I know it's a dreadful thing to say after all we've been through, but this isn't just our ship. It belongs to all gnomes. Everywhere."
He looked relieved when Masklin nodded. "A year ago you didn't even believe there were any other gnomes anywhere," Masklin said. Gerda looked sheepish.
"Yes. Well, that was then. This is now. I don't know what I believe any more, except that there must be thousands of gnomes out there we don't know about. So if we take the ship away, there won't be any hope for them."
I know, said Masklin wretchedly. "But what can we do? We need the ship right now. Anyway, how can we find these other gnomes?"
"We've got the ship," said Gerda.
Masklin waved a hand at the screen, where the landscape was spreading out and becoming misty.
It'd take forever to find gnomes down there. You couldn't do it even with the ship. You'd have to be on the ground. Gnomes keep hidden. You gnomes in the store didn't even know about my people, and we lived a few miles away. We'd never have found Peon's people except by accident.
Besides, he couldn't resist prodding Gerda gently. There's a bigger problem, too. You know what we gnomes are like. Those other gnomes probably wouldn't even believe in the ship. He was immediately sorry he'd said that. Gerda looked more unhappy than he'd ever seen him.
"That's true," the abbot said. "I wouldn't have believed it. I'm not sure I believe it now, and I'm on it.
Maybe, when we've found somewhere to live, we can send the ship back and collect any other gnomes we can find," Masklin hazarded. "I'm sure Angelo would enjoy that." Gerda's shoulders began to shake. For a moment, Masklin thought the gnome was laughing, and then he saw the tears rolling down the abbot's face. Gerda turned away.
"I'm sorry," he muttered. "It's just that there's so much changing. Why can't things stay the same for 5 minutes?
"I think you just have to have a flexible mind," said Masklin.
Flexible? My mind's got so flexible I could pull it out of my ears and tie it under my chin, snapped Gerda. And it hasn't done me a whole lot of good, let me tell you.
He stamped away down one of the corridors. Masklin watched him go. There was a movement behind him. It turned out to be Peon, holding a tray of what had to be fruit, Masklin decided. He realised that hunger had been waiting for an opportunity to make itself felt. He'd never seen fruit that shape and colour. He took a slice. It tasted like a nutty lemon. It's kept well, considering. Where did you get it? Peon, who was learning the language fast, explained that it had come from a machine in a nearby corridor. There were hundreds of pictures of different sorts of food. If you touched a picture, there was a brief humming noise, and then the food dropped onto a tray in a slot. Masklin tried pictures at random and got several different sorts of fruit, a squeaky green vegetable thing, and a piece of meat that tasted rather like smoked salmon. I wonder how it does it, he said aloud. A voice from the wall beside him said, Would you understand if I told you about molecular breakdown and reassembly from a wide range of raw materials? No, said Masklin truthfully. Then it's all done by science. Oh, well, that's all right then. That is you thing, isn't it? Yes. Chewing on the fish meat, Masklin wandered back to the control room and offered some of the food to Angelo. The big screen was showing nothing but clouds. Won't see any quarry in all this, he said. Angelo pulled one of the levers back a bit. There was that brief feeling of extra weight again. They stared at the screen. Wow, said Angelo. That looks familiar, said Masklin. He patted his clothes until he found the folded, crumpled map they'd brought all the way from the store. He spread it out and glanced from it to the screen. The screen showed a disc, made up mainly of different shades of blue and wispy bits of cloud. Any idea what it is? Said Angelo. No, but I know what some of the bits are called, said Masklin. That one that's thick at the top and thin at the bottom is called South America. Look, it's just like it is on the map, only it should have the word South America written on it. Still can't see the quarry, though, said Angelo. Masklin looked at the image in front of them. South America. Grimmer had talked about South America, hadn't she? That's where the frogs lived in flowers. She'd said that once you knew about things like frogs living in flowers, you weren't the same person. He was beginning to see what she meant. Never mind about the quarry for now, he said. The quarry can wait. Find a blue planet. Focus. This is a planet. Most of it is covered in water, but it's still called Earth. Find a country. Focus. Blues and greens and browns under the sun, and long wisps of rain cloud being torn by the mountains. Focus on a mountain, green and dripping, and there's a focus tree hung with moss and covered with flowers, and focus on a flower with a little pool in it. It's an epiphytic bromeliad. Its leaves, although they might be petals, hardly quiver at all as three very small and very golden frogs pull themselves up and gaze in astonishment at the fresh, clear water. Two of them look at their leader, waiting for it to say something suitable for this historic occasion. It's going to be
mip, mip.
And then they slide down the leaf and into the water. Frogs are a bit hazy on the whole idea of time, so how long it was before a strange night came in the middle of the day is hard to tell from a frog's point of view. A wide black shadow drifted over the treetops and came to a halt. After a while, there were voices. The frogs could hear them, although they didn't know what they meant or even what they were. What they heard went like this.
How many mountains are there anyway? I'll go mad if I see another mountain.
I like them.
And some of the trees are the wrong height.
I like them too, Gerda.
And I don't trust Angelo doing the driving.
I think he's getting better, Gerda. Gerda and Masklin swung in a basket made out of metal and wire. It hung from a square hatchway under the ship. The basket bumped gently on the tree branch. The trouble was that humans wouldn't leave them alone. No sooner had they found a likely-looking mountain than aeroplanes or helicopters would buzz around like insects around an eagle. It was distracting. Masklin looked along the branch. Gerda was right. This would have to be the last mountain. But there were certainly flowers here. He crawled along the branch until he reached the nearest flower. It was three times as high as he was. He found a foothold and pulled himself up. There was a pool in there. Six little yellow eyes peered up at him. Masklin stared back. So, it was true after all. He wondered if there was anything he should say to them, if there was anything they could possibly understand. It was quite a long branch and quite thick, but there were tools and things in the ship. They could let down extra wires to hold the branch and winch it up when it was cut free. It would take some time, but that didn't matter. It was important. The thing had said that there were ways of growing plants under lights the same colour as the sun, in pots full of a sort of weak soup that helped plants grow. It should be the easiest thing to keep a branch alive, the easiest thing in the world. If they did everything carefully and gently, the frogs would never know. If the world was a bathtub, the progress of the ship through it would be like the soap, shooting backwards and forwards, never being where anyone was expecting it to be. You could spot where it had just been by aeroplanes and helicopters taking off in a hurry. Or maybe it was like the ball in a roulette wheel, bouncing around and looking for the right number. Or maybe it was just lost. Masklin scratched his chin. The store was in a place called Blackbury, he said. I know that much. So the quarry couldn't have been far away. Angelo waved his hand irritably at the screens. Yes, but it's not like the map, he said. They don't stick names on places. It's ridiculous. How's anyone supposed to know where anywhere is? All right, said Masklin, but you're not to fly down low again to try to read the signposts. Every time you do that, humans rush into the streets and we get lots of shouting on the radio. Why doesn't the thing know where to go, said Gerda. It could find Floridia, so somewhere important like Blackbury ought to be no trouble. I can find no radio messages about Blackbury. There are plenty about Florida, said the thing. At least land somewhere, said Gerda. Angelo pressed a couple of buttons. There's just sea under us right now, he said, and what's that? Below the ship and a long way off, something tiny and white skimmed over the clouds. Could be goose, said Peon. I don't think so, said Angelo carefully. He twiddled a knob. The picture on the screen flickered a bit and then expanded. Is it the Concorde? Said Gerda. Yes, said Angelo. It's going a bit slow, isn't it? Only compared to us, said Angelo. Follow it, said Masklin. We don't know where it's going, said Angelo in a reasonable tone of voice. I do, said Masklin. You looked out of the window when we were on the Concorde. We were going towards the sun. Yes, it was setting, said Angelo. Well, it's morning now. It's going towards the sun again. Well, what about it? It means it's going home. Going home, said Angelo. So, we go with it, yes? Yes. Angelo ran his hands over the ship's controls. Right, he said. Here we go. The ship drew level with the plane. It's moving around a lot, said Angelo, and it's starting to go faster too. I think they may be worried about the ship, said Masklin. Have humans ever seen a ship like this before? Angelo asked the thing. No, but they've made up stories about ships coming from other worlds. Yes, they do that, said Masklin half to himself. That's just the sort of thing they'd do. Sometimes they say the ships will contain friendly people. That's us, said Angelo. And sometimes they say they will contain monsters with wavy tentacles and big teeth. The gnomes looked at one another. Can't the thing send a message to the Concorde drivers, said Gerda? Something like, don't worry, we haven't got any teeth and tentacles guaranteed.
They probably wouldn't believe us, said Angelo. If I had teeth and tentacles all over the place, that's just the sort of message I'd send. Cunning, hmm?
The Concorde screamed across the top of the sky, breaking the transatlantic record. The ship drifted along behind it.
I reckon, said Angelo, looking down, that humans are just about intelligent enough to be crazy.
I think, said Masklin, that maybe they're intelligent enough to be lonely.
The plane touched down with its tyres screaming. Fire engines raced across the airport, and there were other vehicles behind them. The great black ship shot over them, turned across the sky like a frisbee, and slowed.
There's the reservoir, said Gerda, right under us. And there's the railway line, and that's the quarry. It's still there.
Of course it's still there, idiot, muttered Angelo, as he headed the ship towards the hills, which were patchy with melting snow. A pall of black smoke hung over the quarry. As they got closer, they saw it was rising from a burning truck. There were more trucks around it, and also several humans that started to run when they saw the shadow of the ship.
Lonely, eh? Snarled Angelo. If they've hurt a single gnome, they'll wish they'd never been born.
If they've hurt a single gnome, they'll wish I'd never been born, said Masklin. He scanned the landscape below them. Somehow he couldn't imagine Grimmer and Dorcas sitting in holes waiting for humans to take over. Trucks didn't just set fire to themselves. A couple of buildings looked damaged too. Humans wouldn't have done that, would they? He stared at the field by the quarry. The gate had been smashed, and a pair of wide tracks led through the slush and mud. Follow the tracks, he said, and quickly.
Quickly? Quickly? Do you know how difficult it is to make this thing go slowly?
Angelo nudged a lever. The ship lurched up the hillside, straining at the indignity of restraint. The hills were quite flat on the top, forming a kind of plateau overlooking the airport. There was the field where there'd been potatoes. There was the thicket where they'd hunted, and the wood where they'd killed a fox for eating gnomes. And there was something small and yellow rolling across the fields. Angelo craned forward.
Looks like some kind of a machine, he said, fumbling for levers without taking his eyes off the screen. Weird kind of one, though.
There were other things moving on the roads down there. They had flashing lights on top.
Those cars are chasing it, do you think?
Said Angelo. Maybe they want to talk to it about a burning truck, said Masklin. Can you get to it before they do? Angelo narrowed his eyes. He found another lever and gave it a nudge. There was the briefest flicker in the landscape, and the truck was now right in front of them. Move in more, said Masklin. Angelo pressed a button.
See, the screen can show you below, he began. There's gnomes, said Gerda. Yeah, and those cars are running away, shouted Angelo. That's it, run away. Otherwise, it's teeth and tentacles time.
So long as the gnomes don't think that too, said Gerda.
Masklin, do you think...
Once again, Masklin wasn't there. The branch was 30 times longer than the gnome. They'd been keeping it under lights, and it seemed to be growing quite happily with one end in a pot of special plant water. The gnomes who had once flown in the ship had obviously grown lots of plants that way. Peon helped him drag the pot towards the hatch. The frogs watched Masklin with interest. When it was positioned as well as the two of them could manage, Masklin let the hatch open. It wasn't one that slid aside. The ancient gnomes had used it as a kind of lift, but it didn't have wires. It went up and down by some force as mysterious as Auntie's gravy or whatever it was. It dropped away. Masklin looked down and saw the yellow truck roll to a halt. When he straightened up, Peon was giving him a puzzled look.
Flower is a message, said the boy.
Yes, kind of.
Not using words?
No, said Masklin.
Why not?
Masklin shrugged.
Don't know how to say them.
It nearly ends there, but it shouldn't end there.
Gnomes swarmed all over the ship. Young gnomes filled the control room, where they were industriously trying to press buttons. Dorcas and his trainee engineers had disappeared in search of the ship's engines. Voices and laughter echoed along the corridors.
Masklin and Grimmer sat by themselves, watching the frogs in their flower.
I had to see if it was true, said Masklin.
"The most wonderful thing in the world," said Grimmer.
"No, I think there are probably much more wonderful things in the world," said Masklin. "But it's pretty good all the same."
Grimmer told him about events in the quarry, the fight with the humans, and the stealing of Jacob the Earth Mover to escape. She was muddy, her dress torn, her hair looked like it had been combed with a hedge, but she crackled with so much internal power that she was nearly throwing off sparks.
"It's a good thing we got here in time," he thought. "Humans ought to thank me."
"What are we going to do now?" she said.
"I don't know," said Masklin.
"According to the thing, there's worlds out there with gnomes on. Just gnomes, I mean.
Or we can find one all to ourselves. And when we've found somewhere, I want to bring the ship back."
"Why?" said Grimmer.
"Humans," said Masklin. "We should talk to them."
"What?
They really want to believe in... I mean, they spend all their time making up stories about things that don't exist. They're terribly lonely and don't know it." He waved his hands vaguely.
"It's just that I think we might get along with them," he finished.
"They'd turn us into pixies. Not if we come back in the ship. Even humans can tell that the ship isn't very pixie-ish."
Grimmer reached out and took his hand. "Well, if that's what you really want to do..."
"It is. I'll come back with you."
There was a sound behind them. It was Gerda.
"I've come to say goodbye," he said.
"What do you mean?" said Masklin.
"I heard you say you're coming back in the ship."
"Yes, but please, don't argue."
Gerda looked around.
"There are other gnomes out there. Someone ought to tell them about the ship coming back. Someone ought to find all the other gnomes in the world and make sure that they know about the ship. It should be me, don't you think?"
"All by yourself?" said Masklin.
Gerda rummaged in the bag. "No, I'm taking the thing," he said, producing the black cube.
"Don't worry," said the thing. "I have copied myself into the ship's own computers. I can be here and there at the same time."
"It's something I really want to do," said Gerda helplessly.
Masklin thought about arguing and then thought, "Why? Gerda will probably be happier like this."
"Oh, well, if you're sure."
"Yes. More than I've ever been about anything now," said Gerda, "and I've been pretty sure of a lot of things in my time, as you know."
"We'd better find somewhere suitable to set you down."
"That's right," said Gerda. "Somewhere with a lot of geese."
They left him at sunset, by a lake. The last Masklin saw of him was a small figure waving on the shore. And then there was just a lake, turning into a green dot on a dwindling landscape. And then there was nothing. The control room was full of gnomes, watching the landscape unroll as the ship rose. Grimmer stared at it.
"I never realised it looked like that," she said. "There's so much of it."
"It's pretty big," said Masklin.
"You'd think one world would be big enough for all of us," said Grimmer.
"Oh, I don't know," said Masklin. "Maybe one world isn't big enough for anyone. Where are we heading, Angelo?" Angelo rubbed his hands and pulled every lever right back.
"So far up," he said with satisfaction, "that there's no down."
The ship curved up towards the stars. Below, the world stopped unrolling because it had reached its edges and became a black disk against the sun. Gnomes and frogs looked down on it. And the sunlight caught it and made it glow around the rim, sending rays up into the darkness, so that it looked exactly like a flower.